Penguin Random House Audio presents The Big Door Prize by M. O. Walsh. Read for you by Sean Pratt. For my family, my readout, and for the still singing heart of John Prine. Against all odds, honey, we're the Big Door Prize. John Prine. In spite of ourselves. Question. How can you know that your whole life will change on a day the sun rises at the agreed-upon time by science or God or what have you, and the morning birds go about their usual bouncing for worms? How can you know? And why would you think there's another life for you? Perhaps another possibility inside of you already, when the walk that you take each dawn is so lovely and safe. When the roads are all paved and the sidewalks just swept, and those who move along them, like you, seem so content to retread the worn path that they've made. Why would you think it? After all, this is only Deerfield, a town so simple it is named for what you might see and where you might see it. It is a place where storefronts hang flowering baskets, where the rocking chairs gently set on friendly porches look fit for rocking gently the friendly people who owned them, as they rocked gently their friendly parents before them. And such quiet on a morning like this one, such quiet on every stormless morning in Deerfield, that the only sound above you is the rustle of venturing squirrels in the branches. Maybe to your side, the huff of a familiar dog at a familiar fence line who muzzles your hand as you pass. And if this were not enough to comfort you, not enough to seduce you into believing that today is just another in the easy procession of days you began so long ago, the first words you hear spoken on this morning are also the first words you hear spoken on most mornings, from the manager at the grocery store you walk to for coffee, who says, "Good day," and to whom you reply, "Isn't it, though?" So, how could you know? Perhaps you might know on this particular morning in Deerfield, in this small part of South Louisiana, because you see something new at the store. It is a simple-looking machine, sitting next to the customer service desk. It is large enough to enter through curtains, as one would a photo booth at the mall or parish fair, and promises to tell you your potential in life, what your body and mind are capable of doing, based on the science of DNA. Some people in town have already tried this machine, you've heard, and to surprising result. A neighbor opened up a new business after getting her readout. An old friend quit pills and got clean. Another person you know left town entirely, off on some long, dreamt-of vacation they never would have booked before. This kind of talk is enough to make you curious, to make anyone curious, the way word of a simple and miraculous new diet might do, and it costs only $2 to try. Today, tucked safely in your pocket, you have exactly $2, and you, tucked safely into your life, haven't much else to do. So you draw back the curtains and enter the booth. You give it your money. The screen brightens. You read a message that instructs you to take one of the Q-tips provided to remove the plastic and gently swab the inside of your cheek, and so you do this as well, and why not? No one can see you. What would anyone care? You then deposit this into the slot as directed and can't help but grin at the disclaimer, which reads there is a 1% margin of error in a pursuit like this, and that the company, Dynamics, is not liable for any stress your new potential may cause. Yet, still you carry on. You wait for the result. But why? That is the question. Perhaps it is because people like you, people like us, when we are joking, say, "What is the worst that could happen?" But when we are honest, And when we are alone, we wonder, what is the best? 1. The Hubbards. After 39 years and 11-plus months, Douglas Hubbard had finally had enough of being Douglas Hubbard. So, for his 40th birthday, just last Friday, he bought himself a trombone. It was a thing he'd long wanted, and now that it was purchased, Douglas felt this object made him an entirely new man. He was so excited. In fact, he spent his entire weekend polishing the instrument until it nearly glowed. Standing in front of the full-length mirror in his and his wife's bedroom, spinning aloud out magical phrases like Dizzy Douglas, Herbie Hubbard, and Thelonious Doug. He dreamt up enough jazzy nicknames in the first few days alone to sustain several impressive careers, and yet had not even put lip to mouthpiece. Why bother? When a person finds as much joy as Douglas did in simply imagining themselves to be someone else, the actual work required to change, along with so many other things they hold dear, can be forgotten. But tonight, after clumsily blaring his way through his first trombone lesson at a friend's apartment, Douglas Hubbard returned home to his wife, moved aside the wooden birdhouses she'd been building those past months, and set his trombone case down on the table.
"Well,"
he said, "it's official. I can't play a note." "Don't be silly," his wife said. Then she began to cry. This was unusual. Sherilyn Hubbard was typically warm and upbeat at this hour, which she called their wine time, and Douglas always looked forward to seeing her. Through 15 years of what they would both call a happy and uncomplicated marriage, she had remained redheaded and faithful, busy and beautiful in her unpretentious way, and as quick to offer love and encouragement to Douglas as she'd been on the days he first fell for her. But on this night, she stood alone at the far end of their modest kitchen and, instead of greeting Douglas with a hug at the door, wiped her eyes with the undersides of her wrists. She then leaned heavily against their blue and white countertop, which was covered in flipped-open magazines. Beside her, a pot of water boiled quietly on the stove. Near the sink, a box of macaroni and cheese stood unopened. Next to that, Douglas knew, because the day was Wednesday, two hamburger patties sizzled over low, greasy heat in the skillet. Douglas said nothing. He instead removed the blazer he had draped over his arm and placed it on a chair, hung his keys on a hook screwed into the wall for that purpose. He then took off his hat, a brown woolen beret he'd taken to wearing since he bought the trombone, and arranged the wayward hairs on his balding head. He knew Sherilyn hadn't been feeling well, some powerful headaches lately, a dizzy spell or two. He'd been meaning to talk to her about this. The amount of aspirin bottles he'd found about the house, the antihistamine nose spray she'd taken to cupping in her palm those past mornings, the naps she took at odd hours. These are the minor changes to a marital landscape that can worry a thoughtful husband like Douglas. Yet he chalked most of it up to stress. Sherilyn was busy of late in atypical ways. She'd signed up to sell her own handmade birdhouses at the Deerfield Bicentennial that weekend, would have her own booth on the square both Saturday and Sunday, and so had spent the past few months turning their home into a sort of avian sweatshop. There were probably 100 of these little houses, always in eyesight, each in some incomplete phase of construction, with not much time left before the event. That could make anyone nervous. Still, Douglas knew she enjoyed her crafts, had signed up for this booth herself, and so he did not press her. There were other things it could be, of course, besides bird homes. The oncoming heat of a southern spring, the exhaustion from dealing with her elderly mother, who they both worried was losing her mind. Sherilyn's trips to check up or take her shopping had become daily. She therefore quit working her temp jobs around town, cut back on her volunteering, and so maybe that was it, Douglas figured. Maybe she felt her world was shrinking a bit, becoming too predictable,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?